Here at the 23rd Annual American Coalition for Ethanol Conference, I had the opportunity to speak with Lars Herseth, who is the president of the American Coalition for Ethanol, a rancher from South Dakota, and also the father of Stephanie Herseth Sandlin, who is a representative from South Dakota in the U.S. Congress and a good supporter of ethanol issues on Capitol Hill. And Lars, the first thing I'd like to just ask you about is maybe some of your insights that you presented to the crowd here at the ACE conference about what you see going on in Washington, especially with you have a unique perspective with your daughter serving in Congress. And just what do you think about what's going on right now with regard to ethanol issues on Capitol Hill?
Thank you for mentioning her and giving me an opportunity as president of the American Coalition for Ethanol to share some thoughts with you and the people who access your media. Mm-hmm. But I think at times she's as frustrated with the situation as those of us out here in the country who, of course, have an interest in growing this ethanol industry. And I think have to keep reminding of ourselves of, in a relatively short time, how fast we've grown, how fast we answered the call of this country for a cleaner fuel, for the environment, for a fuel that would make us less dependent, you might say, on some areas of the world that aren't really our friends. And we can answer that call not only to the point of where we're at today, but in a growing and ever-expanding alternate fuel industry. But we get frustrated then with some of the kind of more bureaucratic rulemaking processes that are in place in a 30-year-old requirement that ethanol could be no more than 10% of a fuel blend, and how to address that and change that. And that has been frustrating as to how we can pretty well have the policy from not only this administration but the administration before be on our side as far as a national position to go forward, and then yet have the distraction within various departments prohibiting us, at least right now, of getting there. But we do have a very positive outlook on getting beyond what I see as a temporary setback in the fuel blend wall, as we refer to it, and also VTEC, which is kind of a budget allocation for, I call it the enhancement of ethanol. Our distractors call it a subsidy. Mm-hmm. But I don't think we need to apologize for that, because it has been a very small amount of money when you compare, say, for an example, the amount of money that we spend every day or in a week for outsourcing fuel from the Mideast or from other areas of the world. So I think we as ethanol supporters should never apologize for that cost. We certainly need to understand the budget consequences in Washington and what they have to deal with. But I think that can be a good debate rather than kind of an internal fight to come up with where we should go from here.
Another thing you expressed a little frustration about was this little thing called indirect land use, and how we as an industry might be able to respond to people who bring that up to us.
Yes, and it's been a frustrating issue to me, because they actually, number one, they have no science to back it up. It's a theory advanced by a couple different people and adopted by CARB, which is California, that a number of other states seem to follow. Mm-hmm. And so what they end up doing, we even ended up with some of their language in RFS2, which was the advanced requirement for further building out the alternate fuel industry. But I think when those theories with no science behind them are put out there, they're almost a distraction for us, because anybody that is very good in policy, they want to argue every point. And they want to win those argument points. And so we want to end up arguing with those people who are promoting that theory. And we should actually try to get beyond that and just say, we don't want to discuss this with you, since you have no science to back it up. And you're just distracting the overall issue. And you can't answer even whether there's a bigger impact on land use for ethanol production versus urban sprawl or population increases in given parts of the world. You only have a theory, and you're just trying to distract rather than build this out and be constructive.
Mm-hmm. And of course, that's what the ethanol industry has fallen into, having to defend itself instead of being able to promote itself and the good things about it. One of those things that you mentioned, from an agricultural background yourself, is what the ethanol industry has done for rural communities in this country.
Well, I think throughout rural communities and certainly commodity-producing states of any commodity, quite honestly, it has had a huge positive impact. And I'm also a livestock producer. Some of the livestock organizations haven't been so happy with that, but I'm a cow-calf operator yet. I would never let that get in the way of supporting ethanol and for what it's done. And I think it's been terrific. We don't even calculate how much difference it's made in the wealth of rural America. We haven't even come to terms with how much the recent land increase in prices has been attributed to the fact that there was a market for corn, mm-hmm. and a market where you could make some money. And therefore, everything that spins off from that has had a positive impact throughout rural communities in this country.
Well, getting back to the tax credit that we have that's about to expire, and the fact that you said that people like to call that a subsidy. There's a lot of things that are thrown around as subsidies, but one of the things that it is not, they keep saying, well, after 30 years, the ethanol industry should be able to stand on its own, and they shouldn't need this federal help. Well, I mean, and yet at the same time, they ignore the fact that we are subsidizing the oil industry as well, and it's well over 100 years old.
Right. In fact, I saw some recent numbers on that they get from 2.6 to 3 billion a year in some of the ways that they've traditionally, since 1919, been treated in some very favorable tax treatments and some other subsidies. And yet you're part of the question that said, how long before you can stand on your own feet? We could stand there today if we had full access to the market, and that our driving vehicles had access to that fuel. Mm-hmm. So I think that's a short time in coming. I think we can get there relatively soon if we have flex fuel vehicles that the automakers can make pretty soon as cheaply as any other vehicle. And then we have the access in the service stations across the country to have blender pumps so they can access different blends of ethanol. And that's the only way, too, we'll ever get to cellulosic ethanol, because those people today can't get any funding for their projects because there's no market for their fuel, because we're at this blend wall. Mm-hmm. So, I look at that and I think, we've got a good future here. We just need to kind of get beyond some of these other things, and we're going to be rolling again, maybe not quite like the years when they took MTBE out and all of a sudden there was a shortage of ethanol. We might not see that again. But I think we'll see a good demand for our product as soon as the public has a more free choice of choosing it.
Mm-hmm. As a person who's involved in the agriculture industry and as well as being involved in the ethanol industry, give us a little pep talk of why we should be proud, why the farmers and ranchers as well and people in the ethanol industry should be proud of this industry that we've created in this country.
Well, I think number one, Americans are breathing a cleaner air because of ethanol being in that product. I mean, study after study, even sometimes when they're not our friends, have seen that tailpipe emissions are much better coming out of ethanol blends than they are out of straight petroleum products. So I would say that's success number one. Success number two is that to a degree that I don't think we anticipated even 10 years ago, we are supplementing what would otherwise be demands for fuel from imports. Mm-hmm. And we can even better meet that challenge, I think, in the future. But those are two of the very recent successes, capped off by the fact of what it's meant to rural communities, which we talked about earlier. I think it's billions and billions of dollars to everybody's bottom line balance sheets that are involved in agriculture, even if they're not in the ethanol industry, because it has had an effect of a rising tide raising all boats. Mm-hmm. We've been able to raise all those boats, even people that don't raise corn. Land values have gone up because of corn bringing in a few more acres, which mm-hmm. some people don't like, even though they don't realize that way back in the teens we had a lot more acres dedicated to corn than what we do today. Mm-hmm. But yet at the same time, I think that has been the stimulus to the rural economy that has really softened the blow of the recent downturn in our economy over the last 2 years. The ag industry really hasn't had that happen to them. Things have slowed up a little bit, but they really haven't had that dip.
At least it's good to see the people here at the American Coalition for Ethanol meeting. These are the people that really are the champions of this industry, the people that are going to stand behind it no matter what, right?
That's correct. And in fact, to kind of point that out, but our original president, the guy who really started the American Coalition for Ethanol, is a relatively medium-sized farmer, now retired, Merle Anderson. He's in his late 80s at this point. He's at every meeting, and he's never made a penny on ethanol. And he's been at this for 25 years or better, all really out of his own pocket and because he believes. And he believes in this product, and he believes that it can help make America a better place. And that's why he's sitting in the audience today at 88 or 89 years old and still out there in the battle.
Right. Well, bless his heart. Well, thank you very much, Lars, here at the American Coalition for Ethanol meeting in Kansas City. I'm Cindy Zimmerman.